I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Rabbi Alana Susskind, the Director of Strategic Communications for Americans for Peace Now. We'll also have a visit from our two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our new Mevina on Israel, Oshrat Barel. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. L'shana tova tikatevu v'techa temu. A good, healthy, new Jewish year. May it be written and sealed in the Book of Life for 5774 and beyond. I trust that your Rosh Hashanah, your Jewish New Year, was filled with family and friends and brought meaning and beauty to the first days of the 5774 year. This is always a time of exaltation. That's why they call them the High Holy Days in Jewish tradition. But there's also a certain sense of pressure this time of year. We are in the midst of the 10 days of repentance now, the Aseret Yemei Tshuva, when we Jews try to right the wrongs we've done in the past year, to reconcile with anyone we've injured or offended. It's a challenge to try to heal our actions from the past 12 months, and it is perhaps a greater challenge to try to change the habits we have fallen into that lead us to do things we are not so proud of. Our goal during these days of awe is to look honestly at ourselves and to ask God to forgive us those failings we have committed in the last year, and so to try to become whole. But as the Talmud tells us, for sins against God, Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, atones. But for sins against other human beings, the Day of Atonement does not atone until we've made atonement to them personally. God cannot heal the breaches in our relationships. Only we can do that by going to the people we've wronged and asking them to forgive us. So this is the most important time of the year for us morally, a crucial period of reflection, self-examination, and what Israelis call cheshbon ha-nefesh, taking an account of our souls. On Yom Kippur, the fast day of atonement, holiest day of the whole Jewish year, which begins at sundown this Friday night, we commit ourselves to try to repair our own world through repentance, prayer, and charity. Tshuva, tefillah, and tzedakah. The melody that captures the essence of that Yom Kippur experience best is also the only melody that people really come to temple just to hear. It's the Kol Nidre, the renunciation of failed vows that begins the evening of Yom Kippur. It's a melody that for many people captures the heart of the Jewish experience in history with just a few moments of music. Here's the great cantor Alberto Mizrahi's rendition of the first part of Kol Nidre.
Deep down,
That was most of the Kol Nidre, as sung by cantor Alberto Mizrahi in an arrangement by Shalom Secunda. Kol Nidre is designed to bring us close to what is holiest within us. It's not the text so much, but the tune. And at this time of atonement and return, we do well to try to remember that holiness begins for Jews with personal actions, mitzvot, not simply with words or professions of faith. The way to improve the world is by doing acts of goodness, blessing, and courage, not by talking about them, even with God. That's what we dedicate ourselves to this week, actions that matter and improve the world. Nonetheless, we do need to ask God for help, and that's never more clear than in the Kol Nidre's soaring conclusion. Here's Israeli cantor and Broadway star David Fisher, Dudu Fisher, his end of the Kol Nidre.
Ahoy, 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 ahoy. Oh, de asarena al nafshato.
That was the conclusion of the Kol Nidre by cantor Dudu Fisher, the beginning by cantor Alberto Mizrahi, both past guests of Too Jewish. We could do a whole show just on the melody of Kol Nidre, its many interpretations, the famous stories about Kol Nidre Eve, jokes about Kol Nidre, and so on. But the truth is, the only way to truly appreciate the Kol Nidre is to hear it live, in a synagogue, this Friday night, the eve of Yom Kippur, in a room filled with fervent prayer, soaring music, and the power of the great day of atonement. It's a truly amazing experience, and it takes place just one night a year, this coming Friday night. And it is all there to bring us to tshuva, to repentance, to help us learn how to work to heal injustice and brokenness. Also working to cure injustice, but across the globe in Israel, when we return on Too Jewish in just a few moments, we'll meet our guest, Rabbi Alana Susskind, who is the Director of Strategic Planning for Americans for Peace Now. Peace Now, once a very controversial movement in Israel, still has something important for us in America, perhaps never more than now. And we'll find out what it is when we return on Too Jewish.
A Taste of Judaism, the largest and most successful outreach program in the country, celebrates its 14th anniversary year. Over 5,000 people have completed the course offered by Temple Emmanuel, Arizona's first congregation. Now, it's your turn. Taste of Judaism is free and open to all, Jewish or not. Rabbi Sam Kohan and Rabbi Batsheva Appel explore the history and practice of Judaism in 3 2-hour sessions on spirituality, values, and community. Taste of Judaism is an exciting opportunity for anyone who wants to gain an understanding of Jewish culture, history, rituals, community, and practice. The class includes delicious tastes of traditional Jewish foods. Taste of Judaism offers daytime and evening classes in Central, Northwest, and East Tucson, plus the very popular Taste of Judaism Family Class, held at Tucson Hebrew Academy. Adults enjoy a grown-up taste class, while kids enjoy Jewish stories, crafts, and activities with excellent THA teachers. There's no fee or obligation, but space is limited and pre-registration is required. Call Mila Vassar at 520-327-4501 for more information and to register today. That's 520-327-4501.
Parents in Tucson have many choices on where to send their children to school. Consider the best. Consider Tucson Hebrew Academy. Now is the time to secure your spot for the upcoming school year. With a beautiful Foothills K-8 campus and award-winning academics, you owe it to your children to visit THA, Tucson Hebrew Academy, and see what they have to offer. Your child belongs at THA. THA delivers. Low student-teacher ratio supports successful, rigorous academics, and they don't stop there. With an emphasis on the arts, science, and music, THA students learn the Hebrew language and are taught Jewish values along with a rigorous academic curriculum. Your child deserves the best. Call 529-3888 to schedule your tour of THA. Financial aid is available. Don't wait. Space is limited. That's 529-3888 or visit www.thaaz.org. We are delighted to welcome to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Rabbi Alana Susskind. She is the director of, well, I guess the communications director might be the proper term, for Americans for Peace Now. She previously served as an assistant rabbi at Das Israel, Washington's largest conservative synagogue. She has also served as managing editor of Jew School, a leading Jewish faith blog, and was a founding fellow of Klaus Project Rabbis Without Borders. She's now Americans for Peace Now's director of strategic communications. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
So tell us where Peace Now came from, because for some of us, it's an old memory and we haven't heard that much about it lately. For others, it's something important. Can you fill us in?
Sure. Well, Shalom Achshav, Peace Now, is the Israeli peace movement. It was originally established in 1978 when nearly 350 Israeli senior reserve army officers and combat soldiers came together because they wanted the government to sign a peace treaty with Egypt. And they were soldiers who fought, who lost friends, who came to the conclusion that Israel's best chance for security was through peace. And in fact, you know, peace is the core national security issue in Israel. And they knew then what remains true today, that real security for Israel can only be achieved through peace. And it's come to be recognized as Israel's leading grassroots Zionist movement and also conducts comprehensive monitoring of Israeli settlement activity in the West Bank. Americans for Peace Now, where I work, was established in 1981 to help mobilize support for the Israeli peace movement and has since developed into one of the most prominent American Jewish Zionist organizations working to achieve a comprehensive political settlement to the Arab-Israeli conflict.
Now, for many Americans, Peace Now brings to mind really the first counter-movement within Israeli society, seeing the possibility of a two-state solution, which was off the table, never discussed, and now accepted by most Israelis. Has Peace Now become kind of mainstream?
Well, we have maintained that position consistently. It's pretty much exactly as you said, in fact, you know, that we have been maintaining for quite a long time that a two-state solution is the best way to achieve security for Israel. And in fact, the rest of the world has come to fall in line with us.
So Peace Now was sort of prophetic. How does it feel to be a prophet when everybody else comes along for the ride?
Well, not as gratifying as it ought to be, I suppose. you know, what we'd really like to see is we'd like to see it achieved. It's, you know, it's nice that everybody agrees, you know, verbally on, you know, yes, we need a two-state solution. And this, you know, it's funny because there's pretty much a relatively uniform understanding of how we're going to get there. We just have to do it. And that's the work that's going on right now. You know, God willing, we'll have an agreement. Maybe in 9 months, maybe it'll take a little longer, but I think it's actually a very exciting time to be part of this movement.
We will talk much more with Rabbi Alana Susskind about Americans for Peace Now in particular and Peace Now when we come back on Two Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
If you have a question, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com. That's T-O-O Jewish Radio. Or visit our website, twojewishradio.com. You can stream all past and present shows through the website or download us from there at the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. You know, there are so many other beautiful prayers and settings for the liturgy, the prayers of Yom Kippur, all designed to bring us to introspection, holiness, and to focus on our lives, and to help us to become better, more sacred people. Here's a famous children's choir of yesteryear, the Beth Abraham Chorale of Dayton, Ohio, directed by cantor Jerome Kopmar, singing Ya'ale, a hymn for Kol Nidre Eve. May our prayers and supplications rise up to you at dusk, our pleas approach your presence at dawn, and our thanksgiving reach you in the evening on this Day of Atonement. The Beth Abraham Chorale singing Ya'ale from Yom Kippur Eve this coming Friday night. We welcome our Mevina on Israel, Oshrat Bar-El, head of the Weintraub Israel Center here in Tucson. Boker Tov.
Boker Tov to you too.
And Gemar Chatima Tova, may you be sealed in the Book of Life for a good year. Oshrat, your own background is as a Jew descended from Moroccan Jews, from Beit She'an, and the history of the Moroccan Jews goes back to Roman times, more than 2,000 years, mm-hmm. likely. Tell us a little bit about some of the unique aspects of Moroccan Jews and Moroccan Jewish communities.
Here in Israel.
How about both? Should we start with Israel?
I'll combine them, okay? If
Great.
It's okay with you.
Absolutely.
Actually, I wanted today to talk about some of the development town in Israel, which located mostly in the south and in the north. And most of the Moroccan and other new immigrants from North Africa came in the early 1950s. Yeah, 1950. And the government of Israel, the state, decided to locate them in the south and the north from a very reasonable reason, just to protect our borders.
So they became almost like, Zionist outposts.
Since they are Zionist, and since they came to Israel, they decided to move from Israel, some of them from a very wealthy background, left lots of, businesses. Since they came from the Zionist reason, they decide to place them, as I said,
around the north and the south to protect the borders.
Yeah. And they called these cities development cities because they developed through the years, and there used to be a years where was the situation in these cities were very poor.
Very poor.
But
right.
Now it's developed, and the cities get bigger, better education, better work positions. The offers better jobs. And I guess we'll talk more about these development cities in order to understand some of very main issues in Israel, mainly regard the gap and the differences between Tel Aviv, the main city, and Jerusalem, and the small cities.
The peripheral cities. Mm-hmm. And I should note that development cities, started as towns. Sometimes they were tent cities originally, ma'abarot, mm-hmm. they used to talk about in the 50s and 60s. It became the place where so many of the many, many immigrants came in. Mm-hmm. Israel had 600,000 people mm-hmm. in 1948. It absorbed many times that in immigrants. And we'll talk about sort of the long-term effects, not only on Israel, but on the Moroccan Jews that came. Thanks. And again, a good and an easy fast.
Thank you very much.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
And Gemar Chatima Tova, may be sealed for a good year.
Amen.
We've been talking about the issue of human rights and international human rights, talked about the Helsinki Final Act last week, how it applies to Europe, and how it should guarantee a variety of rights to the citizens of various countries. It doesn't always work that way.
Right. Well, you know, certain countries have trends of recidivism or whatever going back in time, and we see in certain countries in Europe
make a case for most countries having some of those
resurgence of anti-Semitism, right, or deeply ingrained attitudes towards women. This is now a problem in Italy. They're looking for legal reform. Very deeply held beliefs and feelings about so-called gypsies, which are more politically correctly called Roma and Sinti, whatever. And in many countries in Eastern Europe in particular, although certainly some parts of the United States, there are strong prejudices against gays and lesbians. And this is now a major issue in terms of the Russian Federation. There's been legislation that's really backwards, backstepping. There have been special units of the police sent out to beat up gays and intimidate them. And there's a huge issue now about the coming Olympics in Sochi. A good friend of mine who's an activist on gay causes did a documentary recently about the situation of gays in Russia. He's originally from Russia himself. As a Jew and as a gay man, he felt obliged to leave. He thought there was no future there. And he left after finishing law school at age 20. I mean, he's a brilliant guy, made a career in a very different field outside of Russia, and now is one of the leading figures in calling for a boycott of the Olympics. Now, the argument goes both ways, like it's unfair to the athletes who've prepared, blah, 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 but is participating in those Olympics an endorsement of implicit or explicit of Russia's policy? And could, like, athletes hold little rainbow flags and sort of stick it to the Russians?
Kind of like John Smith in the 1968 Olympics in Mexico City, and Carlos, right, holding up their fists and, right.
Right. I mean, the question is, how strong would the reaction from Russia be? Would these guys end up in jail? Would they end up being deported? Would it end up disrupting the games totally? I mean, nobody really knows. So I don't have a position one way or another on the question of boycotting the Olympics. I do have a position on the notion that many countries, if not most countries, have a long way to go before they achieve everything that can be hoped for in terms of respect for human rights for all human beings, and seeing that all human beings are created in the image of God and are worthy of protection and respect and dignity and all that. And if you look beyond Europe, the situation gets radically worse very quickly. And I think we should talk about some of the places in the world where the situation is radically worse during our next session.
Thanks, Tom. We will. By the way, of course, I meant John Carlos and Tommy Smith, who protested conditions for blacks in 1968. But obviously, lots of other issues to deal with. Thanks again. An easy fast, a good Yom Kippur.
Thank you, and to you.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service, the first one of the 5774 year. A Abe was making his weekly Shabbat shopping trip to the Jewish section of town when he noticed that his watch stopped working. Fortunately, he saw a store with a giant watch hanging over the door. Entering, he passed a display window filled with exquisite, fancy watches, regular exercise watches, pocket watches, even clocks. It was just the place he needed. So Abe asked the proprietor, "What'll it cost to fix my watch?" But the elderly man replied, "I'm sorry, we don't fix watches." "Well then," said Abe, "how much to replace it?" "I'm sorry," said the man, "we don't sell watches." Abe was puzzled. "So you don't fix watches? You don't sell watches? What do you do?" he asked. "I'm a moyle. I do brisses, you know, circumcisions." "A moyle?" said Abe. "You perform circumcisions, brisses? Then why do you have all these watches hanging in your window?" And the moyle replied, "No, what should I have hanging in my window?" Ah, yes, a classic old Jewish joke of the week, special feature to Jewish just for you for the new year. You should live and be well and tell old jokes. And now a word of Torah. This week, Shabbat is more than just the Sabbath. It is the Shabbat Shabbaton, the great Sabbath of Sabbaths, Yom Kippur. And on this particular Yom Kippur, since it falls on Saturday, it is also, well, Shabbat. I'm not certain if there is such a thing as a Shabbat Shabbaton in Judaism. Perhaps we could just abbreviate it to Shabbat Cubed or Shabbat 3. In any case, with the exception of a few short additional prayers and passages, and the omissions of a couple of other prayers, the liturgy for Yom Kippur is not substantially changed when it falls on Shabbat, and the Torah reading is more or less the same, although we'll divide the reading into 7 aliyot as we do every other Sabbath of the year. Normally Yom Kippur just has 6 aliyot. We do, however, have 2 Torah readings on Yom Kippur, one in the morning and one for the afternoon service. And while atypically for Judaism, we all agree on what the portion of the Torah is that's read on almost every ritual occasion and Shabbat, on Yom Kippur there's a significant difference of opinion, really different choices as to which section of Torah is read. In Orthodox and conservative congregations, the reading for the morning of Yom Kippur this Saturday is a description of the rites of sacrificing animals on the Day of Atonement from the time when the temple stood in Jerusalem, followed by the obscure and interesting ritual of the scapegoat being sent into the wilderness. The afternoon reading is a long listing of the kinds of immorality, especially sexual immorality, that are forbidden by the Torah. The Torah readings in our Reformed Jewish tradition, which nearly always are very close to the traditional ones, are not so much so on Yom Kippur. I believe, however, they are thematically superior to the traditional readings in this case. In the morning, we'll chant the great Torah portion of Nitzavim. Atem Nitzavim Hayom Kulchem. You stand here today, all of you, from the richest to the poorest, the most exalted to the humblest, and the Lord your God presents you with a great and sacred choice. You can either choose to follow the mitzvot, to live a life of morality and dedication to ethics and goodness, or you can sin again and stray from God. That choice is really between spiritual life and spiritual death. The choice is always yours to make. Choose life, the Torah portion says, uvacharta v'chayim, so that you and your children may live long and flourish. Take responsibility. Choose life. A great message on this holiest of days. The afternoon reading for Yom Kippur in Reformed Judaism may be better still. For having urged us to choose to live well, it now goes on to tell us how to do it. Taken from the book of Leviticus, this holiness code is at the heart of all true religion. It teaches us the way to choose life. First, we're told to be holy, because God is holy. In order to be holy, we must be generous to those who are poor or downtrodden. We must work to create a just society. We are to avoid setting a stumbling block before the morally blind. We must endeavor to right the wrongs of the world through our own effort. We must love our neighbors as we love ourselves, and act that way. Interestingly, the famous Haftorah for the afternoon is the whole book of Jonah, in which the prophet endeavors to escape responsibility and to avoid following God's word and way. The object lesson of his life is paired with the instructions of Nitzavim and Kedoshim, Deuteronomy and Leviticus, to teach us not to be like Jonah. Really choose to do the right thing. As we reach the latter part of the highest of the holy days, we read the greatest messages of our tradition. Choose life, live it morally, for the sake of the greater good. Accept your responsibility. Gemar Chatima Tova. May you be sealed in the book of life for a good year, and may you have an easy fast. When we come back on Two Jewish, our guest, the Director of Strategic Communications for the once controversial organization, Americans for Peace Now, Rabbi Alana Susskind, will explain what their single issue is and why all American Jews should care. Find out when we return on Two Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
In very serious and sad news, Rabbi Irwin Kula, the head of the fine Jewish organization KLAL, the National Jewish Center for Learning and Leadership that works across all boundary lines within the Jewish world, weighed in powerfully last week on the terrible abuse scandal at Yeshiva University. In an article published in the Forward, among other places, Kula, a former guest of Two Jewish, revealed that when he was a young high school student at YU, he too was abused. His article is so moving that I have to read it. As one of the high school students abused in the early 70s and as one of the more than 145 people interviewed in the investigation, though not party to the impending multi-party lawsuit against YU, now $380 million, I am disappointed though not surprised by the report that came out. 8 months, 6,300 hours of investigation, more than 145 interviews, and the best that Yeshiva University's administration and board could come up with was three paragraphs that said many people were abused at YU institutions, but they could not give any details because of pending litigation. Kula continues, as someone who spent more than 2 hours being interviewed and rehashing what was so locked away, I never even mentioned it to my wife of 30 years, nor my brother, who also attended the YU high school and unbeknownst to me was similarly abused. I can attest that it's shocking to have your traumatic experience summarized in a few legally cool paragraphs. YU President Richard Joel expressed in an equally expected way the school's deepest and heartfelt remorse, his hope that this recognition brings comfort and closure. It was an appropriately lawyerly response, with a concluding flourish referring to Yom Kippur, the High Holy Day season, and forgiveness, as if this process had been anything like Maimonides' wrenching prescription for genuine repentance. There we have it, said Rabbi Kula, a report that offers nothing we don't already know. It confirms that a part of YU's high school and university culture was predatory, that until 2001 the school's administration simply did not do what any decent and morally evolved authorities are supposed to do, protect and ensure the safety of its students. No surprises here, and actually quite sad. He eventually continues, what don't we have in this report? We will have no serious ethical or spiritual reflection about the relationship between patriarchal all-male adolescent communities and sexual predators. We will not have any conversation about the relationship between highly hierarchical religious cultures in which idealization and transference are common psychological features and lead to abuse of power. We will have no collective thinking about possible common causes for such abuse shared with other religious communities that have been guilty of similar crimes. And of course, we will have no public conversation by a religious and spiritual institution, no less, about the difference between legal categories of civil liability and the psycho-spiritual and psychosocial category of healing and tshuva. It turns out that YU, Yeshiva University, is just one more religious institution among many in America in which young people were abused by people with authority, which failed to protect those whom it was responsible to protect, and which now is doing the best it can to acknowledge its wrongdoing while protecting itself. No Or LeGoyim, light unto the nations here, just an administration and a board that is Kechol HaGoyim, just like everyone else. And now it looks like the New York court that is hearing the case against Yeshiva University will throw out most of the testimony because the Empire State has a statute of limitations on child abuse. It is chilling. It is wrong. And the administrative stonewalling does nothing but further damage the ruined reputation of Yeshiva University, not to mention hurting Judaism and really all religion. Britain's new chief rabbi, Ephraim Mirvis, was sworn in the presence of the heir to the British throne, Prince Charles. Some 1,400 guests were present at last week's ceremony at St. John's Wood Synagogue in North London, in which Rabbi Mirvis was sworn in as the chief rabbi of the United Hebrew Congregations of the Commonwealth. It was the first time a member of the royal family has attended such a ceremony. Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, who retired after 21 distinguished years as the chief rabbi of Great Britain, participated in the ceremony. Mirvis said he would work to enhance Jewish education, build and strengthen Jewish communities, and encourage social responsibility. He also said he will make uniting the branches of Judaism a priority. Good luck. Mirvis, a native of South Africa, is the former chief rabbi of Ireland. He is Britain's 11th chief rabbi since 1704. And Anat Hoffman, chairwoman of Women of the Wall and a former guest of Two Jewish, was the clear winner of the Israeli newspaper Haaretz's Person of the Year poll. It was conducted on Haaretz's Facebook page in English. Anat Hoffman, buttressed by an organized voting drive waged by her many supporters, garnered the largest proportion of the vote, following far behind in second place were the founders of Waze, the Israeli navigation app recently acquired by Google for gazillion dollars, and in third place, Israel's chief peace negotiator, Tzipi Livni. Although Anat Hoffman, a former guest of Two Jewish, did I mention that, would arguably not have been chosen by Hebrew-speaking Israelis as their Person of the Year, her selection fully reflects the prominence she's achieved across the Jewish world over the past 12 months. Besides her role at the helm of Women of the Wall, Hoffman is the executive director of the Israeli Religious Action Center, the legal and advocacy arm of the Reform Movement in Israel. Previously, she served for 14 years as a member of Jerusalem City Council, making a name for herself as a critic of the Orthodox hegemony and defender of religious pluralism in Israel's capital. As head of Women of the Wall, Hoffman's efforts over the past year to secure equal praying rights for women of the Kotel, Jerusalem's holy Western Wall, were at the focal point of media attention and debate in the diaspora and in Israel itself. Her championing of religious pluralism and gender equality, including several arrests by the confused Israeli police, have galvanized American liberal Jews, for whom Anat Hoffman has become a celebrated Jewish heroine. No less significantly, the success of Anat Hoffman's tactics have captured the attention of many Israelis, highlighting the ongoing struggle for religious pluralism and gender equality in Israeli life. The people who voted for me voted for the idea of religious freedom and equality, an idea whose time has come, said Hoffman when she learned she was voted Haaretz's Person of the Year. She said she owed the honor to her board members, the founders in the U.S., the hundreds of women who pray with us every month, the thousands who show solidarity abroad, and of course, all the men who have supported us for 25 years. Here on Two Jewish, we'll continue to watch and see what final plan the Israeli government completes at the Western Wall Plaza for egalitarian prayer. And Anat Hoffman will get most of the credit for making that happen. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world. We welcome back to Two Jewish, our guest this morning, Rabbi Alana Susskind. She's Americans for Peace Now's Director of Strategic Communications. We were talking earlier in the show about the origins of Peace Now. There are now all kinds of organizations in the United States, as well as, of course, in Israel, working for peace. I guess J Street has made the biggest splash in recent years. How does Americans for Peace Now work with some of these other organizations? Who do you see as comrades, who perhaps as not so friendly?
We actually do a lot of work with other organizations. In fact, not very long ago, we got together with J Street and Truah. You may be familiar with it. It's a rabbinic organization on whose board I also sit. And we went and talked at the Israeli embassy. We were very concerned about the E1 developments. And so those are organizations that we often work with or talk to. We are often recognized for our policy. Our excellent policy director, Lara Friedman, who is considered, one of the great experts in the field, of course. And so we tend to be tapped for those policy questions when people want to know, the information, the data. That's what we provide really well. In Israel as well, Shalom Achshav, Peace Now, provides the tracking and monitoring of Israeli settlement activity. And in fact, you can see when people quote, here's where this settlement thing is happening and here's where this outpost thing is happening, it's often that they get the data from us or from Peace Now, Shalom Achshav, the grassroots movement.
What does Americans for Peace Now do? I mean, do you lobby? Do you advocate? Do you raise money? Because different Jewish organizations have kind of different spins.
Right. We do a lot of everything. We are education-focused. We provide a pro-Israel, pro-peace, American Jewish perspective on issues and legislation. We also engage in grassroots political activism. We do outreach to the American Jewish and the Arab American communities, to opinion leaders, to university students, and the public at large. So we do a lot of that. We also raise more than half of Shalom Achshav's budget, so we do some of that as well.
When you guys choose an issue to advocate for, do you choose new issues, or do you simply keep following the same course?
We are essentially a one-issue organization, and we are very, very consistent. We work on getting that two-state solution, security, peace for Israel, in place. That's what we do.
So let's talk about what the term settlements means to Peace Now and the different sort of regions that it affects.
So settlement, technically, it's the term used to denote Israeli civilian communities built in territory conquered by Israel in the Six-Day War in 1967. In other words, anything built outside the Green Line. The Green Line is that line drawn after the 1948 war, and it's actually now accepted by pretty much everyone in the world as to what is Israel and what will be Palestine. So I did answer your question. What is a settlement?
So what some people think of when they hear Peace Now, play devil's advocate, is, we'll give back the Jewish quarter, Jews won't be able to go to the Western Wall anymore. Nobody's really talking about that, are they?
Not really, no. I mean, look, we're a Zionist organization. We're pro-peace, and we know that there will be accommodations made on both sides. Everybody is pretty much... It's just the fine details that need to be worked out. We know more or less what the outlines of the peace agreement will be, and we know that there will be security arrangements that will be made. We know that there are going to be land swaps. We know that there will be neighborhood swaps. We're really not, I don't have the authority as a Peace Now person or, as somebody outside of the negotiations to say what those final details will be.
Of course.
But there's general recognition about the outlines of it.
It's really interesting because I agree with you. I think everybody understands, plus or minus 2 or 3% of land,
what the dimensions of this, and those dimensions have been around for a really long time. You know, they were part of the Oslo process. They were discussed a long time ago. Tzipi Livni, who's now a key negotiator for Israel, actually proposed them in her brief semi-tenure as prime minister before Netanyahu came in. What's changed now?
That's a great question. You know, we really hope that the current negotiations will result in an agreement. And we have reason to believe that it's possible. We're not Pollyannish. We know there's going to be a lot of obstacles, and we've already seen several of them come up. But we also believe that if we all pull together and we work for it, it can happen. But it means that we really, not just in Israel, but as Americans, we have to stand up and we have to act. And we can't just say, hey, yeah, well, there will be peace someday, because there won't be peace someday unless we actually get up and act and do something about it and make sure that the people who are representing us, you know, understand that Jewish Americans want peace. And we believe that if we work for it, it can happen.
Let's talk a little bit about, since, as you said, Shalom Achshav piece now is really about setting the borders a two-state solution and essentially leaving the territories and leaving the settlements. What happens to the people in, oh, I don't know, someplace like Ariel or, for that matter, Male Adumim? That might not be included, might be a land swap there. But what happens to a place like Ariel, which is way out in the territories and yet a substantial community? What does Peace Now see happening to that?
Well, again, you know, we don't do the negotiating. So, you know, it's really not up to us to say, but we know that some accommodation will obviously be made. Either they will, you know, it may be that they work out some way to become, you know, become back into the state, you know, into Israel proper, or they make some other accommodation. I mean, what are the options? They have to do one thing or the other.
It doesn't seem particularly viable for them to remain in a state of Palestine, although that's, of course, another option. What was it that, why is, you know, I guess I keep coming back to why now? I mean, it's a Shalom Achshav, right? Peace now. What was it that Secretary of State John Kerry did or saw that made it possible for the negotiations to resume after, you know, they could have resumed any time along the way? Why now?
He was able to talk quietly with people. You know, there was a lot of maneuvering behind the scenes. It was a moment, you know, he had decided that this is going to be what he did. You know, he spent a huge amount of effort and political currency to get people to the table. And he has the support of the president. It's actually very exciting. You know, we as Americans may even have more, I don't know what the right word for this is, you know, that we have an interest as Americans in stability, and we have an interest in all the ramifications for the region and vital U.S. national interests, but we have a president and a secretary of state who are willing to put themselves out and do it. And I think that's really, really it. You know, we could have done it before. We didn't put the, you know, for whatever reason it didn't happen, and now we're trying. And I think that that's very exciting.
Shalom Achshav also does work on college campuses. What's the atmosphere like for Zionist pro-peace activism on college campuses now?
I think it's actually very good. You know, we can talk about, there's a certain way people often talk about young people, whatever that means, you know, in the Jewish community, that means anyone under 50, I think.
Sometimes 60, thank you, you know, it just depends.
You know, but there's this sort of like, oh, the young people, they don't support Israel. They're not pro-Israel. They're disconnected. And you hear that a lot. But my experience is that that's not actually true. That, in fact, there's different perspectives, obviously. You know, people have a very broad range of how they view it. But that young Jews are actually very often reeling from the dissonance of two different stories. You know, at one time it was easy. You could tell your kids, you know, the pretty things, but they might not really have access to the things that weren't so pretty. Now there's no way to prevent that access, and so you get this sort of dissonant story where we're trying to inculcate this this love of Israel, which I think is very important, but you can't do it without telling the truth. And so when we go and we talk with students, you know, we often hear things like, "We're so glad to finally talk to somebody who really understands that I want to be connected to Israel and I love Israel, but there's all these other things happening and people were not telling me the truth and I don't know, you know, I don't know what to do next." And so we provide a way for students actually to connect to Israel, when to say, yes, there's truth and there are things that are not perfect, but we can work to make Israel better. And that's how they find their connection. And I think that, you know, J Street and Americans for Peace Now and some other organizations, you know, provide a really important way for people to, for people, young people, to connect to Israel. And without it, you know, it's, well, you know.
I just want to say, I still want to be a young person and I'm 52, and in the Jewish community, I actually can be, which is ridiculous.
Let's rope you in.
And it's ridiculous.
I'm all for it.
Thank you very much. I want to thank Rabbi Alana Susskind for a great visit here on Too Jewish. How can people find out more about Americans for Peace Now?
We have lots of super ways to find out. So we have a website, which is peacenow.org. You can find us on Facebook. We're actually one of the largest American Jewish organizations on Facebook. We have like 50,000 blah, blah, blah likes. We also have a new service called NewsNosh, which you can sign up for on our website, which gives an overview of the Israeli press and, you know, what Israelis are obsessing about today on a daily basis. It's totally free. So I would recommend that to anybody. So peacenow.org or our Facebook page, please come and visit, and I hope to see you online.
Thanks so much, Rabbi Susskind. L'shana tova, gemar chatima tova.
Gemar chatima tova.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical playout.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Please join us next Sunday at 9 a.m. when our guest will be Letty Cotton Pogrebin, a very prominent Jewish feminist. Our playout this morning comes appropriately from the concluding service from Yom Kippur's Ni'ilah, the locking of the gates. It's the lovely Sephardic song El Nora Alila, God exalted and awesome, forgive our sins, as sung by the Boston Camerata. My friends, have a Gemar Chatima Tova, a good sealing in the book of life, an easy fast, and a Shavua Tov, a good week. May you be written and sealed for a year of blessing, forgiveness, and peace.